Hello and welcome to the Welsh Connection on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Lynn Morgan and today I'll be hearing about a touch tour at the National Museum Wales, joining the I2I group in the Cannon Valley and of course hearing from the Welsh Connection blogger Fionn Miles, who's been on her travels. But first, audio description. It can make theatre going accessible, but how effective is it? Visually impaired actress Chloe Clark has set up her own company, Elbow Room Theatre Company, exploring new ways to use audio description.
We're working on a project called The Importance of Being Described Earnestly, which is a project all about audio description. And we're developing a piece of theatre that has audio description not only at the heart of it, but it's built around the audio description. This came out of my experiences of what I think of as traditional AD, which for me as a visually impaired audience member, I never really connected with it. I didn't like it very much and I wouldn't opt in for using it. So I wanted to develop a style that really appeals to people like me. Well, even people who do like the traditional style but are interested in experiencing something slightly different.
So what was it about audio description that didn't engage you?
First of all, I really hated having to wear a headset. For the most part, I just found it really isolated me from the people I was with. So I go to the theatre with friends or family because I want to enjoy the experience with them. And I felt that I was totally separate from them having to wear the headset. And secondly, I didn't like the fact that it's just one other person's interpretation of what's happening in front of you. And they're sort of pretending to be objective, which for me doesn't exist. You can't really be objective. So I thought, what if the audio description is live so that everyone experiences it, but also really subjective, so it's character-driven and all the characters are audio-describing at all times and they often conflict in their opinions, so it gives you a bit more of a rounded image of what's happening and also you get a choice of interpretation.
So If you were going to see a play or something, the characters within their dialogue would describe what they were doing, am I right
yes,
in that?
Yes, that's absolutely it. Yeah, they sometimes self-describe, sometimes they describe what other people are doing, but it's always opinion-based. So it's never just your straight sort of AD, he walks over there, but it's very much what that character thinks about the action that's happening or what somebody has said or how they're being described. So it often leads to arguments and hopefully a lot of humour. We've just started our own theatre company, Elbow Room Theatre, and we're focused on producing new writing. So we're particularly interested in incorporating creative access from the outset of new work. But this style of audio description could be developed into or adapted into an existing piece easily, I think, just depending on whether or not you can get the rights to alter an existing piece. But it's a style that could be adopted by a lot more people. So we're trying to present it to a wide variety of people who might come to see our sharing of the work we've done so far, just to experience it for themselves and see how effective it can be.
Often, if you go to a play, you could be sitting next to somebody and at the end of the evening, you've got completely different interpretations of what happened on the stage. With this type of audio description, are you allowing people to interpret things for themselves then? Or are you telling them what to think?
I mean, everyone has a different interpretation, a different reality and a different sense of what's happening on stage. What access does is provides people who are limited in terms of the information they're receiving to have an equal reaction, equal response as everyone else. So what this AD is trying to do is it's giving the same information to everyone. So people will interpret that information differently. In our particular play, it's sort of revealing quite a bit of the subtext in the way that a lot of sighted people would notice body language and expressions. Obviously, visually impaired people aren't going to pick up on as many of those things. So what the AD does here is expose those things. And it works really nicely because it gives everyone, you know, a bit more flavour of what's happening in those characters' minds. But equally. So I think everyone will have a different interpretation of those interpretations again. So it's really interesting.
It is interesting. It's fascinating. And in some ways, I suppose it's enriching the story then, I suppose, for everybody.
Yes, that's the aim. Yeah.
Chloe Clark. Sammy Thorpe was sitting alongside Chloe and I asked Sammy to tell me about her role in the theatre company.
So I'm co-founder of Elbow Room Theatre Company. I've got a background in theatre. I trained as a performer and I also work as a British Sign Language interpreter. So the degree I did was Theatre Arts Education and Deaf Studies, which looked at the integration of sign language within performance. But I met a deaf person when I was doing my GCSEs at school and thought, why am I not learning this language? Why am I doing French? For being forced to do French at school, and I wanted to learn British Sign Language. So I took myself off to evening college and did a course and fell in love with the language and carried on from there and then eventually trained to be an interpreter.
So I'm assuming then that British Sign Language will be incorporated into your productions.
That's the aim. So at the moment we're doing a research and development phase that's focusing on audio description, and integrating access tools is a real complex layering process. So the money that we've been given at the moment needs to focus on audio description, but our aim in the long term is to develop that so we've got sign language access for deaf people. For our sharing on the 7th of December, we do have a sign language interpreter booked. They're not integrated into the performance, they're not a performer, but the sharing will be accessible in British Sign Language as well.
I can see how you both want to make theatre as accessible as possible, but what drove you to form this new company?
I think it came out of a frustration of there not being enough accessible theatre. You get performances maybe on a Monday, Tuesday afternoon that are either audio described or interpreted or captioned. There are a few companies within the UK producing accessible work, so we wanted to increase that by making our own work and making new work as well, which is really exciting.
So where are you based exactly?
So we're based in Cardiff. We don't have an office. We are sort of home-based. We're very new at the moment, but hopefully in the future we'll expand.
Sammy Thorpe, and before that you heard Chloe Clark, co-founders of Elbow Room Theatre Company. I'll be hearing more from Chloe later on The Welsh Connection here on RNIB Connect Radio. Don't Stop Believing by Journey on RNIB Connect Radio. The Best Practice Toolkit for GPs in Wales has now been launched. I asked RNIB Cymru Network Manager Ansley Workman to tell me more.
This was the culmination of a three-year project in partnership with Action and Hearing Loss. And we got Welsh Government Equality Grant funding 3 years ago. And it was about gaining the expertise and the experience of people with sensory loss across Wales for different aspects of public services. So the first year we looked into housing and how housing providers could make their housing more accessible, particularly around communicating with their tenants. And the second year was around social services and people's experience of social services. And again, that culminated in a guide for social services about how that they could actually support people with communication issues. So this year is the last year of the project, and we concentrated on accessing health services, particularly GP surgeries, because we know that lots of people still experience a huge amount of problems just in getting that day-to-day healthcare. So the project had together a working group of people with sensory loss across Wales and gathered their experiences. And out of that came what we are calling a toolkit for GPs, for the receptionists in the surgery, for the nurses and all the staff in GP surgeries. And the intention of that toolkit was everyday easy information for practice staff to use to make sure that they could communicate properly with people with sensory loss. So we ended up with a document that could sit on the desk of the receptionists, of the GPs, which was easy use. You could flick through if you didn't quite know what to do, if you had someone coming in with sight loss that was deaf, that was a BSL user. So this guide hopefully will be used on a daily basis for practice staff. And there's three main things that we're saying. We want people with sensory loss to tell the surgeries, to tell the receptionist and the doctor about their sensory loss. We then ask them if they can share the information. Then we ask them to ask for the information they need in the format they need and what they need for good, clear communication. And then we ask them to share feedback to the surgeries, you know, good feedback and bad feedback, so the surgeries can learn. So an example of the type of things that's in this toolkit, etiquette, you know, how do you speak to somebody with sight loss? And it's things like, don't talk to the person that they're with, their companion, talk to the person with sight loss. Use words, avoid nods, you know, avoid gestures. So top tips like that, that are very simple, but make a huge difference. But there's also information in there about guiding, how to support someone if they needed guided about the surgery or while they're in a room and they're maybe moving from a desk to a table. And also very practical advice about providing information in accessible formats. So we give some guidance on how to make clear print, large print, giant print, how to access getting documents in Braille or electronically. So we're hoping that actually this very practical guide is something that people will pick up and use, because we know already that people find it very difficult often to access their own GP surgeries. And that could be because of the systems that are in place. For example, text messaging is often not used. Getting to surgery can be difficult if you don't have transport and you've got sight loss. So we're hoping that this is going to be very practical difference to GPs' surgeries across Wales. The document now, we've got hard copies rather than having them in PDF or Word files on the computer. They're actually going to be distributed over the next month or two to all the GP surgeries in Wales.
So people who are blind, partially sighted or deaf, as you say, they should perhaps make a point of when they go to their GP by saying, well, I understand you have information, can you help me?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to have our own strategy for making sure that people with sight loss know about this document and know that they can ask their surgeries for it. And we'll be hopefully getting feedback on that.
RNIB Cymru Network Manager Ansley Workman on the new Best Practice Toolkit for GPs in Wales. Time now to hear from the Welsh Connection blogger Fionn Miles, who's been on holiday with friend Abby White to Lanzarote.
It could have been a bit of a dodgy start to the holiday because support didn't turn up in the airport, did they?
No, and they wanted us to wait another 20 minutes, but I wasn't going to do that. And it was easy to ask another passenger to just show us where to go based on the directions that we had, and they were pretty specific directions.
Yeah, we asked that nice German chap to show us where the escalator was with a giant model of a volcano.
Exactly. I thought it was actually pretty funny that I have a guide dog and Paul, who was meeting us, didn't see us come through.
I know, he said, I've been looking for people with a guide dog, and we walked right past him.
Which one's the blind one in that group?
But it was handy that he was the owner of the villa because he brought us here and showed us round.
He did. That was really very helpful.
Although we didn't show us where all the lights were, so we accidentally smashed something looking for a light, which, never mind.
But you know what? I think potentially any sighted traveller who's had a couple of drinks might have the same problem. So
I was a bit worried about being in a villa rather than a hotel, because when you've got a hotel, obviously you've got staff on hand and you can ask to arrange trips and, you know, to show you around stuff. But I suppose it was really handy that there were shops around the corner, wasn't it?
Oh, I just think the location is brilliant. Less than 5 minutes away, and it's an easy road to cross, and everyone was so helpful. I mean, even on that first day when we wanted to do some grocery shopping and there was nobody in the store who was confident speaking English to take us round, and I went back to the patisserie where we had lunch, and my plan was to ask if anyone could give us an extra 10 minutes at the end of their shift to help us with shopping. And Rochelle, one of the ladies who works a little way up on the row of shops, she was on a break and she just said, "I'll help," and she was fantastic. It was that, and I find that anywhere you go, really, that there's always people who are willing to help and step
in. Exactly, if you ask, you'll get help. If, like when we got a bit lost when Annie was in a little bit of a grump and near the villa, somebody came out of their garden and was going to help us find our way out. So, you know, we were never absolutely lost.
No, exactly. And it was easy enough to arrange trips as well. So you arranged the show around through the app, and then from that we asked Alejandro if he had any suggestions of cruises, and his girlfriend had a connection, so we went on the cruise today, and that was brilliant.
You were umming and ahhing, weren't you, whether we should tell them of VI or not, because when you went horse riding once you didn't tell them, just in case they just made you trot around the paddock and not, you know,
yeah,
not go through the forest.
Do you or don't you?
Yeah, whereas I did tell them, and they were great, because they didn't really question me much, and when we got there, Sven, as well as his normal duties, was totally happy to take people on a little tour of the church of the little island that we landed on, but I just took his arm and you potted behind with Annie Dog, so it wasn't any great hassle for them, but he did kind of look after us all day.
He was absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah, really, really good, and watched out for where we were and where Annie was on the beach, and, oh, it was just fantastic.
And the show around app, like, fine, because I used show around in Australia. It was really good. Local people just say what they can offer, and they say how much it is an hour, and they go, right, I'll have you for 6 hours, and this is what we'll do. So that's what I did with Alejandro, so we decided we want to go and see a volcano. And to do that, I thought, if we go on a bus with kind of 40 other people, that might be tricky. They might have been great, like Sven today, but it might have been an issue. So having, like, one person and the two of us in his 4x4...
We probably wouldn't have had the experience of going to the visitor centre, which was absolutely stonkingly awesome for a VI.
The best visitor. I've never
experienced a visitor centre that is that accessible.
I know what all the Canary Islands feel like by having that tactile map. I've never known which Canary Island was there, and I never knew that Fuerteventura felt like a really weird bird.
And that Tenerife feels like a smoker's pipe.
And they had loads of things to poke and prod, like the, you know, volcanic rock.
You lifted up the lids and felt the sea urchins and the rocks and the all sorts of different things from the sea and the... That was just awesome, and you could smell the different scents.
And there was that room where they had the simulation of a volcano,
which is brilliant.
Absolutely fantastic.
And somebody was very happy to look after Annie during that time, so...
Right, I think it's time for some more wine and go in the jacuzzi.
Love that idea. Come and move that in my direction. Thankful for that, it's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are my sunrise on the darkest day. Got me feeling some kind of way. Make me wanna savor every moment slowly, slowly. You fit me, tailor made, love how you put it on. Got the only key, know how to turn it on. The way you nibble on my ear, the only words I wanna hear. Baby, take it slow so we can last long. Tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso. Oh yeah. Ya me está gustando más de lo normal. Todo mi sentido va pidiendo más. Esto hay que tomarlo sin ningún apuro. Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello despacito.
despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído. Para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito. Quiero gestionarte a besos despacito. Firmo las paredes de tu laberinto. Y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. Suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas, pero pa' montarlo aquí tengo la pieza, oye.
Oh yeah. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo en las paredes de tu laberinto. Ser en tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. This is how we do it down in Puerto Rico. I just wanna hear you screaming, ay bendito. I can go forever cuando esté contigo.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Que enseñes a mi boca tus lugares favoritos.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Justin Bieber with Despacito, the choice of Fionn Miles. And we'll be hearing more from Fionn on The Welsh Connection next time here on RNIB Connect Radio. Sometimes it's good to have a chat or just have some company. Pauline and Eileen are members of the Eye to Eye group in Mountain Ash, and they told me about their sight loss.
Well, I was a district nurse working in Cannon Valley for many years. And then I noticed my eyesight was deteriorating. I knew I was a diabetic because they had picked it up when I went for a medical. And they tested my urine and my GP sent for me post-haste. This is about 30 years ago. And it was the normal procedure then to control firstly by diet, but as the years went on, that wasn't enough, so I went on medication. And I was on medication for many, many years. And during this time, I was having what they call diabetic retinopathy, which is an X-ray at the back of your eyes to monitor how the backs of your eyes were working. Well, it turned out that a common cause was diabetes, that some of the blood vessels at the back of the eye were leaking, and this was impairing my vision. So eventually I went to see a consultant from the eye department. And he said, yes, there was bleeding at the back of my eyes, and he recommended that I had injections in my eyes, which sounds horrible, but when it turned out, it wasn't so bad, because what happened was they'd give you anesthetic eye drops in your eyes, leave it for a while, so that when you went, it didn't hurt. It was just that you were aware of people fiddling, but it didn't hurt at all. And they'd leave you about 2 months, send for you, see what was happening. If it was improving, okay. If it was still bleeding, another lot of injections, which is what happened to me. I had 3 or 4 lots of injections, and the left eye, the sight is practically nil now. But in the right eye, they managed to stop the bleeding. So I have some sight in my right eye. So I'm registered partially sighted now. And I started coming to the group. And of course, everybody's got their own stories and everybody is different. So, you know, you just carry on. And you live life as best you can.
Physically, I'm fit as a fiddle. What I've got, I think, is detached retina. I've got no sight in that one at all. And I've got less than 5% in that one. Oh, I had to go before a panel, that's right. That's how I knew about the retina. This is when I was first diagnosed, and that was... I was 73, I think, at the time, 73 at the time. And I heard him saying, is there any hope? And he goes, oh, no, 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 he said, it can only get worse. Well, it has so much now that it's in the family thing, apparently. And I found that I never wore glasses as a youngster, never, nothing at all. It is when I got, mine, I'm 93 now, so it's about 20 years ago. And I was finding it difficult, but it was so gradual that I tapped it to it. Yeah. You see, it was a very gradual thing, going back and forth to the optician, see? But anyway, as regards to me, I've adapted. But I spend half my day looking for things. I put them down. I can't see where I put them. So I've got into the what's called to put them where I can see them, rather than out of sight of the place tidy. I put them where I can see them. It's worked all right. When Ron was alive, you see, I'd never applied for any help at all because he took me everywhere. We had a car. But anyway, when he died, I tried then for 5 years living on my own. I couldn't face another winter. Then I found I couldn't go to the shops. I couldn't do the shopping. But anyway, I got now, I was 83, and I thought I'd had 5 years on my own. And it was a struggle, I can tell you. Good neighbours, mine, excellent. My next door knew great. But anyway, I found I was getting older and I thought I can do another winter. I used to have someone to take me to church every weekend. But then once they leave me, I was down rock bottom. I was all right when I was with them, chatting away and everything and meeting all my old, which was I was in school with and everything, you know, going to church. But once I got home, the weekend then, down in the dumps, and I realised I can't do it no more. I said, I can't. Well, so my daughter-in-law said, shall we go down to Lisa Gwynaiva? Best thing I ever done. I came to Lisa Gwynaiva. Now, what they say, they look after you till the day you die. And it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And we went on trips outside the door, didn't have to worry about sight. And the wardens, wonderful. I couldn't explain it. And they were there. Now that's all changed. They've taken all that away. They've had to cut back. And, of course, now it's not council, it's a housing association. But anyway, as it is now, my next-door neighbour, she's a retired teacher, and she does all my writing. But the last 2 months, it's the sun. It's blinding me. But I keep going, if you understand. I could go on the bus, but I don't. I won't. I walk. Just keep the legs going. Once you rest, you rust, and I firmly believe that. So as it is now, the things I can't cope with is like television. I can put it on. I can only see blurs. I got the talking book, and I love reading, you see. But you get down in the dumps, you know, I think.
Right, and how do you combat that?
Well, I'm a Catholic. So I say a rosary, and that's what I do. And by the time I say them, it's time for me to get up. It's no good to expect anybody to help you. I think you've got to do that yourself.
quality of life is pretty good because I have very good neighbours who look after me, and I take advantage of everything that's on offer. I go to a day centre, I come to Eye to Eye. I also go to Positive Steps, which is under the umbrella of the mental health people, because, of course, with everything that was going on with my eyes, I got extremely depressed. So I'm under the care of a consultant there, and I do have medication, but with it all, I'm managing well.
So when you go to the Positive Steps, what happens there?
Well, that's more of a social group, because a lot of the people there have different mental health problems. More or less, we have what they call a round robin, which means that each person, if they so desire, can say what's been happening during the week, whether they've had a good week or a bad week or whatever mental health problems they've got. Are they getting better? Are they getting worse? And like all these social groups, it's because you are in the group and you listen to other people's stories and you pick up lots and lots of tips. So that's the best part of belonging to any of these self-help groups that I find anyway.
So you would recommend people attend as many sort of social gatherings as they can?
Well, yes, because I find the biggest obstacle is we can't get there. I mean, I used to drive with my job, but of course I can't anymore because I can't blimey see. But I will be 82. And I've learned to Skype on my tablet so that I can talk to my granddaughter in Australia.
Pauline and Eileen, who are members of the Mountain Ash Eye to Eye group. For further information, call 01443 401 411. That's 01443 401 411. You're listening to The Welsh Connection on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Lynn Morgan.
This is RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB understands the challenges and concerns facing employers when taking on someone with sight loss or when an existing employee begins losing their sight. That's why RNIB have published a new Guide for Employers. The guide addresses common questions and sets out the benefits of employing a blind or partially sighted person. It covers everything an employer needs to know about employing someone with sight loss, from the recruitment and interview process to making sure the right equipment is in place for the employee to be successful in carrying out their role and progressing their career. To learn more about the RNIB's Guide for Employers and download a copy, visit rnib.org.uk/employing-someone, or to obtain a free hard copy, email employmentservices@rnib.org.uk.
Online Today is a new project led by RNIB to help people with sensory loss get online and gain the basic skills to use technology, from browsing websites to keeping in touch with family and friends. Call 0303 123 9999 to find out more.
RNIB's amazing volunteers help us reach the people who need us most. We need your skills, expertise and passion so that together we can support blind and partially sighted people to live confident, independent lives. Volunteering your time for us is a great way to meet people, learn new skills and expand your horizons. We have more than 100 different volunteering opportunities across the UK. If you only have a few hours to spare, we'll have something to suit you. Why not give it a try? Visit rnib.org.uk/volunteering or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 and help us make every day better for people affected by sight loss.
This is RNIB Connect Radio.
Alan George recently took a touch tour at the Herbarium in the National Museum, Wales. But before he visited the Department of Natural Sciences, he spoke to Learning Officer Stephanie Roberts and asked her when the touch tours began.
Well, it began about 18 months ago now, I think. We realised that we do a lot of work with different visitor groups, but there was a big gap in activities or events for people with a visual impairment to come along to, and we decided that we really needed to do something about this. So we invited a company in called Vocalise, and they gave a group of staff some initial training on how to deliver audio descriptions. And it opened our eyes, really. We saw we can really do something with this. We can use it quite easily and just make the galleries more accessible for people with visual impairment. So it went from there, really. After that training, it sort of opened up a whole world for us, and we sort of thought we need to do something about this, and we can do something about it. So that's when it started, really.
What tours have you done so far, and how do you select what to show?
We've got a lot of curators and a lot of learning staff, and they decide between them. We split them up into groups and say, you can deliver a tour on this date. And they really come up with a theme. We try to select themes that are going to be most popular with our visitors. So the dinosaurs are obviously a really popular one, and the impressionists are really popular. Also sculpture, I think particularly with people with visual impairment, sculpture is a fantastic subject because it's tactile. Usually visitors are not allowed to touch our sculptures, but we've had special permission from the conservation team that when we do audio description tours, we can actually put gloves on and touch sculptures like The Kiss by Rodin. So amazing, amazing sculptures. So that one's been really popular. But we do try to vary the themes, and it will depend on the member of staff that's leading the tour, on their interests.
So how often are the tours, and what are we going to see today?
Tours happen every other month, and they're always advertised on our website and in What's On and through partner networks. Today we're going to have a really special behind the scenes visit today, actually, in the herbarium. And not many people get to go behind the scenes, so that's quite nice. We've got two curators leading the tour, and they are experts in their field. And one is going to be talking to you about cones, and the other is going to be talking to you about shells. So it's a handling session, so we're going to be lots of opportunities to touch natural science specimens from the collection.
Well, that introduction really whetted my appetite for the tour ahead. We made our way back through the museum and into one of the rooms behind the scenes, the Department of Natural Sciences, not normally accessible to visitors. We took our seats at a long table that would help us safely handle some of the more delicate exhibits. Sally Wyman is the curator of botany.
At the moment you're in the Welsh National Herbarium, so I take it you all know what a herbarium is. A collection of vascular plants, and the majority of them are pressed, like this one I'm passing around now. So there's a specimen in front of you, and it has been pressed in our ovens.
Can I touch?
Yes, you can, yes. So this was a dandelion when it was out in the garden, but it's been pressed quite flat, and we've got 250,000 pressed plant specimens in this store.
It's fascinating. Look at the stalk on it. Well, I presume that's the stalk. It's fascinating.
And up to the left-hand corner up here, in this little bit of paper, a little bit higher up again.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that's where we keep some of the seeds then of each of the flowers as well.
Yeah, oh, that's clever.
So you've got the pressing, and then you've got some of the seeds as well.
Some seeds there.
And then they all go on the same bit of card together.
Yeah, right.
So Welsh St. Donat's, it says on there.
Oh, not far away.
Mm. 1970, wow.
Oh.
So this talk is going to be about cones and shells. So I'm talking about cones. So I shall pass some Scots pine cones round. So there's one in front of you. What I'm passing around now, these Scots pine, they're all the female cones, because the male cones are a lot smaller and they contain all of the pollen. So these are the female cones that come to maturity and have the seed attached. When the cone opens, it's usually in nice weather. So then the seeds fly out because they get dispersed by the wind. So when it's not a very nice day, they close up tight to protect the seeds so they don't rot. So these are from pines that I'm passing around now. So that one's in front of you. And these are pine needles. And if you feel right down to the base, you'll feel that these particular ones are in groups of two.
Yes, they are.
So that is a method of identifying pines. So they're either in groups of two, three or four, invariably.
Cones, large and small, were passed around, some as small as a marble, and another the size of a large coconut. I hadn't realised how different cones from around the world were to handle. Some were spiky, whilst others were quite smooth and delicate. Next for us to handle were the shells. Jennifer Gallican is the curator of Invertebrate Biodiversity.
So you're going to feel lots of different types of shell because I'm going to hand around quite a few. Yeah, the main things we're looking at today are the difference between the sea snails and the bivalves. So bivalves meaning two valves. So we're going to be handing around a whole load of different sea snails to you. Some of them are very heavy.
It's massive, isn't it?
They're coil bodies and they have a big shell opening.
Yeah, there's a big, great big hole there.
So that big opening is for a squidgy body. So you know how the snails in your garden have got like a shell and then they've got a squidgy body. So that's what we call a mollusk. So I work on the mollusk collections. And mollusks come in lots of different shapes and sizes. And you've got bivalves, which we're going to look at in a minute, and these snail type things. So they're all tropical sea snails and they come from all over the world. Pacific, Indian Ocean, Red Sea, all over the place. The largest sea snail, which I have in my hand, which is approximately half a metre long. It is the Australian trumpet shell. I will be passing it round. It is very heavy. You are welcome to hold it and feel it. This is the biggest species of sea snail. It lives in Australia, up in the north. And it feeds on metre-long marine worms, so sea worms.
What a fascinating afternoon I've spent here at the National Museum. And I'll certainly return for some of the future tours, which will include Victorian art and our early geological origins. Something for everyone, I'm sure you'll agree.
Alan George at the National Museum of Wales, Cardiff. If you would like to know more about the Touch Tours, visit their website, museum.wales. You're listening to The Welsh Connection on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Lynn Morgan. And if you'd like to get in touch, email radio@rnib.org.uk. Earlier on The Welsh Connection, I spoke to Chloe Clark and Sammy Thorpe about their new venture, Elbow Room Theatre Company. Working on a new way to use audio description, I asked Chloe to tell me about the importance of being described earnestly, which is in development.
We've had a commission from Unlimited, which is a funding body commissioning disabled artists specifically, funded through Arts Council Wales. And we have been given this fund to research and develop this piece, The Importance of Being Described Earnestly, which has absolutely nothing to do with Oscar Wilde, by the way. And it's this exploration of this new style of audio description that hopefully appeals to everyone. And the point is that access really is universal, so everyone can enjoy it as an artistic, creative tool as opposed to just an access tool. And in doing that, we're really trying to pave the way to allow venues to see what an opportunity, well, not just venues, but directors, writers, producers, theatre makers, to really see what an opportunity using creative access is. It really opens up your creative world as opposed to inhibiting the creative process, which I think a lot of people see it as doing at the moment. And hopefully in doing this, as Sammy said, you know, there are so few accessible performances offered. We really hope that people will start to see that access can be provided within the framework of existing shows or new shows, and it should be considered from the very outset rather than something you tack on at the end, which is why we only have, you know, one AD'd performance or one captioned performance sort of programmed per season at the moment. We think that is changing, but slowly, and we just, rather than sort of whinging about how it's not very accessible at the moment, we just wanted to work on this piece to sort of show that there is work out there happening and do it ourselves, basically.
So what's the story or the premise of The Importance of Being Described Earnestly?
So the premise is we have a fictional theatre company putting on an accessible performance. Now, they have decided to remove themselves from society for a period of time to make truthful theatre. So they have holed themselves up in the Western Studio in the Wales Millennium Centre for about 18 months. And the audience comes in to experience their space and their process. Hopefully a lot of comedy comes from the fact that we are really pulling on a lot of personal experience here to make fun a little bit of existing attitudes towards access and what makes good accessible theatre. And that's sort of the surface layer of it. What lies underneath all of that is very much the characters' relationships and attitudes to their situation and deeper issues surrounding environmental issues and the state of current affairs in the world today, really. But it's all with this audio description style at the forefront of it.
So have you written it then, or have you commissioned somebody to write it?
We brought in a very talented writer, Jimmy Whittaker, and he has been involved from the outset. So we've done two rounds of research and development. This is the second round. Last year, we started with the first round and we devised a piece together with six actors and me and Jimmy. And from what they devised, Jimmy then went and wrote a script. And then we came back and we reworked that script. And then Jimmy went away and wrote another script. As Sammy said, it's a layering process. And this is a really unique way of working. So it's literally devising script, devising. And it's a cyclical thing that goes round and round. So it's really interesting to see how we then workshop a script and people ad-lib and bring new things to it. And then Jimmy goes away and writes all of that down. We've had Alistair Sill, who is an audio describer, come in and provide his own audio description script as well, which is then integrated into the main script. And we've had visually impaired consultants come in to consult on how effective that AD style is. And so far it's looking very positive.
So you start off with one premise.
Mm-hmm.
How far are you moving away from that? Or does the story stay the same and just the way you tell the story change?
I think the way we tell the story has changed, and also the premise very much was quite loose at the beginning. So we knew that we wanted this theatre company, and we knew that we wanted to set the show as sort of an open rehearsal. So the audience comes in thinking they're watching an open rehearsal, a sharing. They've been invited in to observe. And thereby it allows us to really bring in the audience and use the audience a lot. So you're just as much part of the action as the actors are. But yes, it has developed quite a lot. It stayed the same premise, but it's just become richer and richer and richer as we've developed these layers of audio description, bringing out more of the subtext. And Jimmy has developed the script. We didn't have this idea of them having removed themselves from society for so long before, and that's enriched it again. So
you've been working on its development. When will it be ready for performance?
We feel it's really getting there. We've got until the 7th of December when we do this presentation, this sharing to the public. But we hope to have had a finished, finalised script before next January. And then we hope to get further funding to rehearse and then tour the piece. So the piece should be ready to actually go out on tour, be totally completed by next autumn.
You've mentioned the sharing a couple of times. Can you just clarify exactly what that is?
The sharing is really just a presentation of the work and the findings we've got so far from the research and development we've done. And what we really want is to get as mixed an audience of visually impaired and sighted people as possible to come in. We also are appealing to as many producers and programmers to come from theatres and venues to get a taste of the show with the hopes that they'll want to program it next year. We've had a lot of positive responses from venues so far, and we would really like people's feedback on in terms of how effective they think this style is. And so the aim of the sharing is to get a really mixed audience in. It's all about just showing them a few excerpts of the play. It's not the finished piece, but it's just a taste, a flavour of the show that hopefully will leave you wanting more.
So are the audience invited to the sharing? How does that work? What's the procedure?
It is ticketed because we need to know numbers, but the tickets are free. So you can book them through our website, elbowroomtheatre.com. There's just a form at the bottom of the page to fill in to book a ticket. It has just your details and then any access requirements you might have. So we need to know numbers, but that's the only reason for the ticketing at the moment. It's going to be at the Western Studio in the Wales Millennium Centre at 2 p.m. on Thursday the 7th of December.
So when you've done the sharing, what happens next?
What happens is we get as much feedback as we can from the audience who attended, and we complete a very fun funding application form that will allow us to get funding for the actual production next year. So the sharing really is vital in terms of getting people's expressions of interest for the show to tour next year, because it needs to have a life beyond this. It's important work, we think. You know, we've really poured our heart and soul into it, and we just think the more people it can reach, the better, because it's all about creative access and showing people that this is possible. We think audio description is quite low in the pecking order in terms of access, so I think it's time that it got a bit more exposure. So it's really about just trying to push this show for next year and get it touring in the autumn.
Chloe Clark. If you would like to attend the sharing of The Importance of Being Described Earnestly, which is at the Western Studios in the Wales Millennium Centre at 2 p.m. on Thursday the 7th of December, you can book your tickets, which are free, at elbowroomtheatre.com.
And let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
London with Fly Me to the Moon here on RNIB Connect Radio. Before we end today, I've got an important announcement about Christmas. If you know someone who is blind or partially sighted and would like a letter from Father Christmas in English or Welsh, then Cardiff Transcription Executive Alison Thomas has some essential information.
So RNIB and RNIB Cymru are again working with Father Christmas and the Elves this year to ensure that all children who are registered blind or partially sighted living in Wales can write to Father Christmas, and the Elves will ensure that they get a response in their preferred format, albeit Braille, large print or an audio CD in either English or Welsh. If they require a response in Braille, large print or audio, they need to send their letters to the Elves by the 1st of December to ensure that with the Christmas post that they receive their response in time. There's also an option to get a letter email back to them. So the email responses need to be in by the 15th of December at the very latest.
So how do they contact Father Christmas for this service?
So the Elves are going to be based at our head office in Peterborough. So the letter responses need to be sent to Santa Claus at RNIB Midgate House, Midgate, Peterborough, PE1 1TN, no later than the 1st of December. If they require an email response, the email needs to be sent no later than the 15th of December to santa@rnib.org.uk. So when the letters are sent in, if you can all ensure that on the letter it contains your name and address, a phone number in case the Elves have any queries, obviously, if you'd need a response in English or Welsh or both, that's also an option. And what your preferred format is as well, if it's in Braille, if it's grade 1 or grade 2. And in large print as well, if you could note the size of the print that you require and if there's any particular font that you read as well.
Now, if they want their response in Welsh, do they use those same contact details?
They do. And they're able to write in Welsh because obviously the elves speak Welsh and English. So whatever the preferred language is, they send their letter in that language and then they'll get a response.
And so does Father Christmas reply in Welsh too?
He does indeed. He took time out last year from his very busy schedule to pay us a visit here in Cardiff to record a reply in audio format for a child who'd written to him requesting a Welsh audio format of their letter.
Mae Mrs Cornavi heb sôn am yr holl geirw, carachod a thylwythdeg yn dymuno nadolig llawen i chi, a'ch teulu, bob un o chi. Bob bendith i chi, bydd nadolig yn un o'r rhai gorau fi'n siŵr, mewn pob ffordd. A fi yn disgwyl ymlaen am y daith. Ho, 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 hei, fi offi baratoi.
That was Father Christmas, Sean Corn, wishing the recipient a happy Christmas from him, Mrs. Claus, the elves and the reindeer, and sending his best wishes to all the family. He also said that he thought it would be a great Christmas and he was looking forward to the journey. So, Alison, those details again.
To have a response in either Braille, large print or an audio CD, they need to be in by Friday the 1st of December. To have a response on email, it's no later than the 15th of December.
Thank you, Alison. Happy Christmas.
Dala Clawen.
So, that's it from this week's Welsh Connection. Thanks to all those who contributed to today's programme. Join me, Lynn Morgan, the week after next for the Welsh Connection at 6pm on Wednesday and 4pm on Saturday, here on RNIB Connect Radio.